Prabhu Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Shakti Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopura Shama Kunda Radha Kati Giri Gopura Dham Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadit Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jumana Tosi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ananda Gauri Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Samavetta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gopura Vrindandi All glory to Sri Guru Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Vishvanaya Krishna Sarvale Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Prachalana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Krishna Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Sri Krishna Bhakta Vrinda Candle Point Chapter 1 Verse 37 Aho Asadvan Tishtam Hiyad Habib Neshatoham Indriya Avidya Rachita Avishama Avishai Anda Upe Tadalam Malam Manusha Vanitaya Vinodam Rigam Ma Dikditi Gahayam Chakara. The king then criticized himself. Alas, how condemned I have become because of my sense gratification. I have now fallen into material enjoyment, which is exactly like a covered well. I have had enough. I am not going to enjoy any more. Just see how I have become like a dancing monkey in the hands of my wife. Because of this, I am condemned. Therefore, how condemned is the advancement of material knowledge can be understood from the behavior of Maharaj Priyavrata, who performed such wonderful acts as creating another sun which shone during the night, and created a chariot so great that its wheels formed vast oceans. These activities are so great that modern scientists cannot even imagine how such things can be done. Maharaj Priyavrata acted very wonderfully in the material field of activities, but because he was dealing in sense gratification, ruling his kingdom, dancing to the indication of his beautiful wife, he personally condemned himself. When we think about this example of Maharaj Priyavrata, we can consider how degraded is the modern civilization and materialistic advancement. Modern so-called scientists and other materialists are very satisfied because they can construct great bridges, roads, and machines. But such activities are nothing comparable to those of Maharaj Priyavrata. If Maharaj Priyavrata could condemn himself in spite of his wonderful activities, how condemned are we in our so-called advancement of material civilization? We can conclude that such advancement has nothing to do with the problems of the living entity entangled within this material world. Unfortunately, modern man does not understand his entanglement and how condemned he is, nor does he know what kind of body he is going to have in the next life. From the spiritual point of view, a great kingdom, beautiful wife, and wonderful material activities are all impediments to spiritual advancement. Maharaj Priyavrata has served the great sage Narada sincerely. Therefore, even though he had accepted material opulence, he could not be deviated from his own past. He again became Krishna conscious, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. In devotional service, there is no loss or diminution, and even a small service rendered in devotional service is sufficient to save one from the greatest danger. Such renunciation as Maharaj Priyavrata is possible only by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engendered in a person. When people are powerful, when they have a beautiful wife, a beautiful home, and material popularity, they become more and more entangled. Priyavrata Maharaj, however, had been completely trained on the great stage Narada, revived his great Krishna consciousness by all impediments. Translation, the king thus began criticizing himself, alas, how condemned I have become because of my sense gratification. I have now fallen under material enjoyment, which is exactly like recovered well. I have had enough, I'm not going to enjoy anymore. Just see how I have become like a dancing monkey in the hands of my wife. Because of this, I am condemned. So, as in the previous verse, this criticism of material life is continual. The previous verse stated that he decided he would give up the kingdom and all the material activities he was doing. So this verse is his words, and he actually begins to say exactly what he has realized. And he is very regretful. He says, Asadu anushtitam. I have done something which is not good at all. It's very bad. And what is it? I have been absorbed in material activities. And I've fallen into the andukupa, the blind well of material enjoyment due to ignorance. And now I'm just like a dancing monkey or a pet animal belonging to the wife. So this is a admission of his fallen state. At the same time, we understand he's a very exalted soul. So we know it is the custom of the great Vaishnavas to regard themselves as the lowest being. And in fact, one of the aspects of surrender or sharanam or sharanagati is that one should feel oneself very wretched and miserable. This is actually an example of that type of attitude. We see that as a king, he did his duties very nicely. He protected the citizens, etc. And he did this, of course, because it was requested that he do so. So out of duty, he did these things. So in one sense, he could not be condemned, because this actually was the request made. He didn't want to take the kingdom, but he was requested to do so because there was no one else to do it. So he did his duty. So he cannot really be condemned at all. Yet because of his own humble attitude, he condemns himself for falling into the blind well of household life and becoming materially attached. We understand that he is actually not so materially attached after all, because he was very exalted. So exalted that Narada Muni became his guru. So how could he be materially attached, really? We can take this as simply an expression of his humility. And in order to carry out the next task, which is giving up the kingdom. So, in any case, for the normal person, this is the condition that because of association with material circumstances and objects, one becomes attached. And it is very likely that this will happen if one has house, wealth, family members, etc. So if one is a householder, it is very likely to happen. And if one is a wealthy householder, it is more likely to happen. So Priyavrata was the king of the whole Bhumandala, more or less. So it is said that his sons became the rulers of the different dvipas in Bhumandala. So he was a very, very powerful person. Not only the Bharatvarsha, but all the other realms were under his control. So he was a very exalted person with great wealth and power. So it is likely, of course, that such a person with wealth, power, longevity, etc., would become proud and attached to his wealth, position, etc. But we see that Priyavrata, on the other hand, was able to, at a certain point, give everything up. How is it possible? Possible because he was actually trained as a devotee of the Lord. So he never lost that influence. And so Prabhupada has quoted a verse here, Neha Bikarmanasa Supratyavaya Navijate, that if one performs bhakti, then the effect is never lost, it does not diminish. it may seem to disappear at certain times, but actually it's still there. There is, of course, some exception. If one commits aparadhas, then the bhakti can decrease. But otherwise, no. It may look like it has disappeared, but then it'll appear again later on. So we can say this is the case of Priyavrata. When he became engaged in household life and ruling the kingdom, then it looked like his devotional attachments were not so apparent. But then again, when he was at a certain age, he decided, okay, I will renounce all this. And then again, the devotional attitude became very strong. So it was not suddenly appearing. Actually, it appeared because it was there already. It just had to manifest within him at a certain point in time. The process of bhakti, therefore, is different from other processes. We cannot say the same thing about jnana or yoga or karma. They are not permanent. Karma, of course, obviously, you get some money and then you spend it, it's gone. You use up your good karma and then you are finished. You go to Swargaloka, your karma is finished, you fall down. So the effects of karma are not permanent. We can say about jnana, if you get liberation, permanent, yes. But before that point, no. So if you do jnana, it's very easily you can destroy all the credits you have in jnana by doing sinful activities, and suddenly you're left with zero again. And the same with yoga. It is possible that you can actually destroy your credits very easily. Of course, we have in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna saying that if you're a yogi and you advance to a certain point but don't get perfection, then you can continue in your next life. So even if you've fallen from yoga, you can continue. So that, of course, is the benefit of being fixed in yoga. You can continue to get the results in the next life, etc. However, it is more destructible than bhakti, even the yoga results of yoga. So therefore, we distinguish the process of bhakti from all other processes. So the effects will continue life after life, and one can get the benefits even if one is not perfect in this lifetime. One can continue next lifetime or next lifetime, and the results are there. So, as I said, the only negative aspect is aparadha. So this can destroy or diminish the bhakti. But sinful activities in themselves do not do so. And therefore, in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the sudaracha person, the one who does achar, which is sudara, very bad, that person is still my devotee, which means his bhakti is not destroyed by the sinful activity. It's still there. So there is a special position given to the devotee. It is not affected by normal sinful activities. So this is also there in the example of Priyavrata. Of course, he didn't do any sinful activities, but he became engaged in material activities. So this could in no way impede his bhakti. In terms of yoga and jnana, however, this can be a great impediment because, and therefore, one is taught to be practiced by Raghya and live in the forest, etc., to become completely detached from everything. So this is exactly the opposite. So the jnani and the yogi cannot exist in this circumstance. Their the results are going to decrease as they go on and become destroyed. Not so for bhakti. It continues even in these circumstances which look unfavorable. So therefore this example shows not only the greatness of Priyavrata, but also the greatness of the process of bhakti, that it is distinct from the other processes and is not affected by all these activities. The other point, of course, is that, as Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar Devotion, that we are not so much interested in Bhagu Vairagya, or renunciation for renunciation's sake, in which one renounces everything because it's giving attachment. So the devotee is able to not renounce everything, but use everything for Krishna. And then he doesn't get the effect of those objects. So it's not necessary that he live in an isolated place by himself with no objects of sense gratification around him, which is generally the practice for the jnanis and the yogis. But at the same time, he has to act in a certain way so that he does not become materially attached to those objects. So how he does so is he utilizes everything in the service of the Supreme Lord. He doesn't use it for himself. So as a great king, of course, this is also quite natural. The king is not, not supposed to become attached to his powerful position or whatnot. He also has some sattva mixed with the rajas. So the normal king also should not become too attached to material things. And to his duty as part of his kshatriya nature in ruling over the kingdom, etc. In the case of Priyavrata, he was a special king because he was a great devotee of the Lord as well. So it was not very difficult for him to exist in the situation without attachment, because he was already a devotee of the Lord, and therefore all these objects had no really effect on him because he could see them in relation to the Lord. It was the will of the Lord that he rule the kingdom, so he did that as a service to the Lord, not for his own enjoyment. And of course his own practice of devotion was there, so he used objects to glorify the Lord rather than to use them for himself. So that is the example of a king. Now the normal person in the material world also, he must struggle more for his material needs to survive in the material world, whereas Priyavrata only did it out of duty. He didn't have to struggle because he was the king, but he still followed his duties. So a normal person in the world is a little different. He has to struggle, work very hard just to survive in the material world. So that extra burden is there, working very hard. So naturally when he gets the results, that person is liable to be very attached to the results and think this is mine because I worked so hard to get it. So the devotee will have to be careful that if he's working in the material world and getting his results, that he's able to be situated in yukta vairagya and utilize the objects of his gain through his work or whatever for the service of the Supreme Lord and not for himself. So the we could say, well, in one sense, household life is a license for sense gratification. So how do we use sense gratification in the service of the Lord? How do we? Because one is naturally allowed certain amounts of pleasure as a householder. How do we relate that to the Lord? So the answer is that simply the all the results of our activities, somehow we should engage in the service of the Lord. So therefore, if one has children, we should also try to raise them as devotees of the Lord. And all the objects that we get around us, somehow, even though they may be used materially or whatever, somehow we should also try to relate that to the service of the Supreme Lord. Bhakti, unlike the other processes, is a process which can be practiced in all circumstances, whereas other processes can't. Even karma yoga cannot be practiced in all circumstances. People who are not in the system of our ashram can't do it. And jnana and yoga cannot be practiced unless One is in situations of isolation, renunciation, etc. Bhakti can be practiced in all these situations. So that is illustrated here by the case of Kriya Vrata. So, at a certain point, by the will of the Lord, he decided, I have to leave this kingdom and fully dedicate myself to spiritual life and devotion. So therefore he began thinking this way and seeing the previous life as something to be condemned and therefore given up and take to another process. So this is natural, of course, for a person as a grihastha to, at a certain age, become more serious about spiritual life and therefore desire to give up household life and live more simply and dedicate oneself to more spiritual activities. So after ruling for millions of years then and raising his sons who also were qualified as leaders, then he decided to take this step and give up the kingdom for full spiritual life.
Jnani and yogis, they are realized so, but unless they don't take the shelter of the Lord, then it's all wasted here.
Yeah, they can advance to a certain degree, but liberation is only granted by the Supreme Lord, ultimately. Jnana itself cannot produce liberation. Yoga itself cannot produce liberation since they're material processes. So only the mercy of the Lord can do that. So if they offend the Lord, they can't get liberation. And therefore they fall from their position. So the real jnani has to give proper respect to the Lord. Same with the yogi.
We are liberated, isn't it? Well,
if one is truly liberated, no. Bhagavatam says, vimukta manina, they think they're liberated. So they're in the material world in a very high position. We can say they are jivan mukta or whatever in the material world, but they can fall from that position.
Well, you said that somebody stops doing devotional service, he manifests devotional service. But does it depend on bhakti that he manifests on its own, or does it depend on the association of devotees?
Various factors. Sometimes it may be because some obstacle is there, it has disappeared. A material obstacle or something, it disappears for some time, and maybe next lifetime it may appear, like when the obstacle has disappeared or whatever like that. It can be due to the mercy of devotees, whatever, various factors are there. But of course, if the mercy of devotees is there, it's more likely to appear quickly. Yeah, that's in any case. Bhakti and its development is dependent upon association. Well, of course, that's secondary. Here it is expressing the fact that he is very unfortunate and he criticizes himself. But of course, secondarily, of course, he can take the attitude that other people are seeing that he's also like that, and therefore he should set a good example. So, of course, that is there as a king. As I said previously, the kings at a certain age give up the kingdom and they take vanaprastha life, so does. That is a good example for the population.
Yeah.
So that's aparad. So when the sins become aparad, the aparad can destroy bhakti. But not all sinful activities become aparad. So when you commit the sinful activity, thinking of utilizing the process of bhakti to neutralize the results, then that type of sinful activity becomes aparad.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
In normal life, if the results are used, Indian people like Rukhira, they now they have to be born and brought up in it's more like karma, but not.
Well, it's not as direct as hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. But we utilize those things, whatever is in our life. In karma yoga, we are bound to do certain duties, and then we offer the results to the Lord. So it's slightly different there, where we are bound to do duties. Aparads. Well, there are many effects of aparad. Aparad is also a sin of sorts, but it's a sin related to the Lord and his devotees and the process of bhakti, that's all. So, obviously it's going to have effects, like a sinful activity. Whatever a sinful activity can cause you bad suffering in the future or whatever. But the more important thing is that it's distinguished from regular sin in the fact that it also decreases or destroys bhakti. Well, whatever varnashram we can set up is like a shadow. We cannot have obviously the same system. All we can do is take some of the good points of it and institute that for the population at large, and good conduct, etc. That aspect, but moral principles, etc. one can use and whatever, but for setting up the whole system, it is very difficult to do unless we have some government there, ruled by a king. Well, as I said, we're only taking certain aspects which may be favorable for bhakti, ultimately. That's all. Now that we're instituting varnashram as such and then judging people according to birth and varna, etc., then it becomes very external. So we're just taking certain elements like good conduct, etc., and applying it to devotees. But so there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, so that's the main principle. And we can take aspects of the varnashram system which are favorable to bhakti, use those. Well, the real aparad means to intentionally want to criticize or degrade or insult or injure another devotee for material reasons. That's when it becomes serious. If you try to do something and they take it as aparad, of course, then there's a little problem, but it's not a serious one if our intentions are good.
The opposing party doesn't take it as seriously.
Then it's also not, well, if he doesn't take it seriously, it's not a problem. But if one's intentions are bad, even if he doesn't take it seriously, then you get the effect. If you have no bad intentions, nothing, no problem.
What about within the family? What about within the family? Sometimes husband and wife, they quarrel with each other.
They quarrel with each other. Well, if the devotee is conscious of proper conduct as a devotee, then that could be minimized. But they have to be, you know, quite aware of their proper Vaishnava conduct. And then they can avoid that as much as possible. Because it's the material world, of course, and everybody's not pure, there's bound to be some disturbance, but we can minimize the effects by proper Vaishnava conduct. Well, it's possible because Lord Chaitanya says that it's like the mad elephant. So the mad elephant tramples on the bhakti creeper and it gets destroyed. So it's dead. So it has to be started all over again if it's to do that. So then they have to wait to get faith and do whatever after that point.
Yeah.
But that's an extreme position, of course. Not all Vaishnava uprights will do that, but if it's extreme, it may do that.
But that means an aparadhi is even the
faith is destroyed. Yeah, okay. No more seed of bhakti. And start a new seed. Well, if the chances are more if one is a false Vaishnava and one is only practicing devotion for material motives. If one has sincerity, of course, then it's much less likely to have intentional aparadhas. Well, of course, other people may not find out, but that person knows, obviously. They want material things, they're for material things, they know.
Once a lot of people tell a yogi, sometimes they keep the children's name as Krishna, Gauranga's name. Sometimes they have to chastise the children calling the name of the Lord.
Yeah.
Hey, Radha, please come and lead you. They're asking, is it avatar or not avatar?
Well, in any case, the chanting of the name is powerful. So Ajamil, he despite ignorantly chanting the name of the Lord without even associating with the Lord, he got good effect. And of course, in that, of course, sometimes he may chastise the children also. So it wasn't because it's not an attitude towards the Lord, an offensive attitude towards the Lord. Therefore, it doesn't have bad effect. No, no, he wasn't a devotee. Ajamil was a Brahmin. No, no, no. He was just a Brahmana.
How did he think of Krishna at the time of death?
Huh?
He called Narayan.
He called Narayan because of the name of his son, that's all. Name of his son. He just called out for his son because it was attached to his son Narayana, and that therefore the Vishnu Dutas came instead of the Yama Dutas. And they said, Vishnu Dutas, you cannot touch him because he said the name Narayana, and the name of Narayana is so powerful that it protects one and destroys all those karmas. So you cannot. Yeah. No, he was a Brahmana. No, it's considered that if one has done a Vaishnava aparadha, that then one has to go and actually sincerely regret it and apologize to the person who's one is offended. Sincerely.
What about if the other devotee who feels very comfortable is coming asking excuse? Okay. That's also an aparadha in this case. There's something offending me. And he comes and tells me that I'm very sorry to do and I feel very proud and saying, oh, he's sending it to me now. He's also coming in aparadha again.
Well, yeah, in some sense, yeah. So, yes, you get the effect of self, then I suppose.
Very delicate, I suppose, in the moment. Knowingly, unknowingly, we tend to make the same of.
Well, unknowingly, you'll say, is not so bad. There's no, it's obvious some effect is there, but it's not a bad effect. It's when it's intentional. That is the main effect.
The devotee that sinful activity, you don't tell the authority that.
Well, the main atonement for sinful acts is the process of bhakti itself. As in the case of chapter 9 where it says that even the most sinful person is still my devotee, I consider him my devotee, and soon he will rectify himself. So, in that example, it's explained that the main atonement is only bhakti itself. The process of bhakti will destroy the results of those sinful activities. That's the main process. If one continues bhakti, fine. If one doesn't do bhakti anymore, then it's a problem. But obviously, if he's a devotee, then he continues the process of bhakti, and the effects of the sin are destroyed.
Someone said that enemy forgives and friend forgives. What sort of an attitude can be attributed?
Who says that?
It's a proverb.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Enemy forgives and a friend forgives.
Okay. Well, yeah. No, it depends on what type of what are we doing? Are we chanting more to? If we have aparads, obviously, yes. Then by chanting more, we can help to alleviate the effects. If it's simply a material condition, obviously, the more bhakti we do, yes, that's also better. If we're in a bad material position in the material world, in Kali Yuga, yes, we can do more if we're possible. The more bhakti one can do, the better. Well, then one will continue to go up and down in devotional service, that's all. Every advancement is countered by lack of advancement, so then one will stay in the same position for a long time. Thank you.